The Next CMO podcast explores topics that are on the minds of forward-thinking marketing leaders, from vision and strategy to leadership and emerging technologies. The Next CMO is sponsored by Planful, a platform to build, manage, and measure your marketing plan, track all your marketing spend, and connect your budget with outcomes to measure your ROI. Check it out at planful.com/marketing. Your CFO will love you for it. I'm your host, Scott Todaro, a 32-year marketing veteran, seven-time head of marketing, and co-author of the book, The Next CMO. So welcome to another episode of The Next CMO podcast. I am your host, Scott Todaro, and I'm here with Jason Lyman. Now, I'm really excited to have Jason here for a lot of reasons. One, because I had a conversation with him prior to this, and he's a good guy. This is going to be a lot of fun. But also on top of it, he's got a lot of experience running fairly large marketing teams. And one of the problems that I hear over and over again talking to CMOs is they just struggle hiring the right people, scaling their team the right way, prioritizing things. And so when Jason, you know, reached out and said, geez, I want to be part of the podcast, and he told me what he wanted to talk about, I said, we got to get you on. Now, Jason's got a ton of experience. He's a three-time head of marketing. He's worked at great companies, Customer.io, Ethos, Better Cloud. These are all great companies that are doing exceptionally well. And he had an opportunity to scale all those marketing teams. So I think as we're going through our discussion here today, I think you're going to pick up a lot of great points on things like prioritizing who to hire, how to hire, what to look for in people. Also, how to maintain consistency with your team as you add more people. Because we all know, unfortunately, marketing doesn't scale in a linear fashion with sales. So it's always very difficult to figure out what is that right next touch. So without any further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Jason. But the first question I wanted to ask is just how do you approach this? How do you set this up? I mean, can you share your experience in scaling any of the teams or all of them all at once? Or was there a formula that you used?
Yeah, absolutely. I was really lucky that I had a chance to join a high growth startup pretty early in my career. So just a little bit of context. I spent a few years as a strategy consultant, did a lot of work for technology companies and realized that's where I wanted to focus going forward. And so I went back to grad school, did a couple years at Berkeley, and actually started out at a really big, you know, big company, Microsoft. I worked in the Office 365 group up there. Pretty quickly realized that like I'm not a big company guy. And so started kind of looking for that next step after I felt like I had kind of learned what I needed to learn. And so after 2 years, I was lucky enough to join Dropbox pretty early. So when I joined, the marketing team was maybe 10 or 11 people, and I was the second product marketer. And then over the course of the 4.5 years that I was there, that marketing team scaled to 120 people, and I was managing a team of 20 product marketers and 7 campaign managers. And so it was a really amazing ride where I was able to see different phases of growth, was able to develop a ton of best practices, and kind of caught the bug, because for me, the challenges like motivated me. And that's what kind of got me excited going into work every day. And then since that experience, I really kind of sought out those roles. And you kind of alluded to some of the companies that I've been at subsequently. And I think one thing I noticed was there's a lot of consistency as far as the key challenges that I was facing as I was looking to scale these teams. And so, you know, for me, the themes that kind of kept coming up were, how do you prioritize in the right way? How do you get the right people to join your team and make sure that you're finding the right backgrounds that are going to be a fit? How do you maintain that cross-functional alignment with key stakeholders and making sure that you're swimming in the same direction? And how do you maintain, you know, that consistency in storytelling and messaging? And those were all pretty consistent challenges, and ones that I think it's important to have a point of view and a mental model that you can use when faced in those situations.
Very good. I mean, it's interesting when we start talking about prioritization. I think you could probably provide some advice to early stage heads of marketing. Where do you kind of look at the starting point, and how do you prioritize the order of the types of hires you want to bring into your company?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, you know, make sure that you're clear around what your company's top priorities are, and making sure that you then have clear alignment around how marketing is going to support those initiatives. Because in the end, like, that's how value is going to be perceived by your CEO and the broader kind of executive team that you're working for. And so as you look at that, start to really focus around what are the big rocks that you want to deliver as being a CMO. Because I think in the end, it's so easy to get focused or get distracted, if you will, with the ad hoc requests. Like, you know, you don't want to be subservient to the person who's kind of banging on the table the loudest. You always want to stay focused around how you can deliver the most value. So by having those big rocks in place, it allows you to maximize the return that you have on the resources that are available to you and the, you know, investment dollars that you're going to put to work. And then you need to make sure for those big rocks, you have strong measurement in place, because in the end, you know, you got to tell a story around the impact that you're delivering. And so measurement is really important as you try to figure out, where do I double down, or where do I need to pivot? You know, and that you need that signal. You know, being a CMO is like hard enough. And so you need to make sure that you have these gauges in place to help you be reactive when needed. And then, you know, the last thing I'll probably say is make sure that you keep a less is more mindset. I think it's, you know, and a lot of times you're always going to have more ideas, honestly, more good ideas than you have the time, the budget, the energy to go after. And so I like to think about myself as almost like an investor, where it's like, I have limited amount of dollars that I'm going to put to work. And so you got to be opinionated around, you know, the stocks that you think are going to drive the biggest upside. In this case, it's like, what are the projects? What are the marketing initiatives? And then once you have that in place, that then easily can then be translated into, you know, some of these bigger decisions around, you know, who do you hire, and, you know, where do you kind of prioritize budget and dollars to deliver impact?
I couldn't agree with you more. In fact, we talk about it on this podcast all the time, starting with goals and then doing measurement. And it's interesting, you know, a lot of CMOs out there struggle with defining their goals. And one of the things that I like that you talked about with the big rocks, looking at your company goals and, you know, trying to make sure that you're meeting what the company demands are, what you've, as an executive team, have set, and then working with those cross-functional teams. So tell me a little bit about working with cross-functional teams, because I'm sure that as you're going through the hiring process, you're getting, like you said, you're getting feedback, I'm sure, from the head of sales, the CFO. How do you make sure that you prioritize and work with the cross-functional teams to make sure you're satisfying all the requirements?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, you nailed it in that collaboration is key, especially when you're going through this high growth phase. I mean, I think that, you know, one thing you have to be comfortable with as a CMO is that change is inevitable. And so it's important that you have clear communication and touch points with your key stakeholders. And, you know, I think it's really important too that, you know, the CMO is not the primary point of contact for everything that's going on inside of the marketing organization. So it's really important that you distribute that communication and that ownership across all the different layers. You know, I almost kind of think about it as like a cake, where, you know, you as the CMO, you might be the frosting, and you're interacting with your peers. That's your head of sales. That's your head of product. That's the, you know, CEO, your CFO. But you also need other layers in the cake to also be aligned. And so, you know, you have the director that might be running your demand gen, or, you know, you have your leader that's running your product marketing function. They need to be interacting with their peers and their respective functions. And then making sure that your individual contributors know who their cross-functional partners are. And while they might not have this formal touch point, they need to know who they should be reaching out to, who they need to build relationships with. And, you know, one of the best ways to do that is figure out how you can integrate into the existing rhythms that those cross-functional partners have. Because in the end, you know, they're always going to default to prioritize towards communicating with, you know, their direct reports. But really where success comes is when you're able to be proactive and get ahead of what needs to get done. And having that visibility is really important. So, you know, when I was at Dropbox and Podium, I was leading the product marketing function at the time. And I was a weekly participant in my the weekly product leads meeting. And I was a member of the extended leadership team for the sales organization. And in those meetings, there were times where they were talking about things that were not applicable to me. But what I found was, is that the 20 to 30% of the topics that did apply were hugely impactful. And so it allowed me to be way more agile and allowed me to adjust as needed. And in turn, they saw that that responsiveness, and that further strengthened the relationship. And so it justified, you know, my my interactions with them at that more kind of granular level. So I really encourage people, you know, you can't assume that people are going to adapt to you. So the more that you can snap into what is that kind of consistent operating motion, I think the more success you're going to have in building those relationships, communicating more effectively, and being able to adapt as needed.
And it's interesting, you brought up, you know, some of the structuring, and you said that you delegate a lot of the authority down. You were talking about layers of a cake. It was making me very hungry, but also at the same time, very delicious. And we should talk more about it, because one of the things that I hear from CMOs a lot of times is, am I going to be able to hire the right people underneath me? Hiring is very difficult these days. There's a talent gap that's out there. The really good talent costs a tremendous amount of money. We've seen in B2B marketing that there's budgets have been cut back on hiring that top talent underneath a CMO, which puts more pressure on the CMO to make all of these decisions. Like you said, to be that liaison with all the other groups, and that just becomes a daunting task. So how do you go about finding the right people, prioritizing those particular roles, and which type of roles do you give that level of responsibility, and then trust that they're going to be able to network with the rest of the organization in order to get these things done?
Yeah, I think there's a few principles that I found a lot of success with. I think the first is, make sure that you're hiring based upon the maturity of the business that you do have. And so if you're an early stage business, or you're a little bit smaller, you know, that's kind of where you need people that are much more adaptable and flexible. You know, I kind of think about these people as a Swiss Army knife, where you can flex them in the way that you need them to work. They might not have this kind of depth of experience, but in the end, a lot of the stuff that you're doing is pretty standard and straightforward. And so you need someone that's willing to be scrappy, that's comfortable with ambiguity. And in turn, I found that those people are really deliver a ton of ROI for the business. And so when resources are really tight, they're the most effective. However, you're eventually going to hit this inflection point where you have to switch from generalist to specialist. And, you know, that's not the same for every company. So it's hard for me to say, once you hit 20 people, then that's when you start to flip, or it's earlier or later. But I think the key that you need to realize is that when the problems start to become more sophisticated and more challenging, that's likely when you need somebody that can bring with them a wealth of knowledge, and they're able to, and they in turn have really focused on a certain piece of the marketing puzzle that you need. And so that, I think, is something that is an important kind of insight that you need to be constantly looking for and assessing. And then when you think about hiring those specialists, it's really important that you focus on people that have been a specialist at that stage in the company's life cycle. One of the issues that I saw happen pretty regularly across the companies I've worked at is leaders get really excited about somebody who has this big brand. So maybe they've worked at the market leader in your space, and that company is probably 1,000 people, 10,000 people, 100,000 people, but they only know how to operate in that stage of the business. So them, you know, operating with all of the access to resources, like more unlimited budget, like they then struggle if you put them in this high growth situation. And vice versa, it doesn't work if you're pulling somebody who's only really been, you know, that Swiss Army knife, and try to put them in a situation where there's a lot of structure and process around that. And so it's really important to not get distracted by the flashy brand or someone with the pedigree that isn't really aligned with where you are at that company stage. You know, I think in the end, you got to find the people that know their bread and butter. And so, you know, some people that's really early stage, some people that's this kind of mid stage, high growth kind of effort. And in some cases, you need people that have that big company experience. But I think as you, if you think about hiring through that lens, it's going to help you avoid bringing in people that aren't able to adapt to what's needed for the business. And you really want, as you said, to bring those people in that you can trust. And to me, that gave me way more conviction that they're going to be able to be successful in the environment in which we're operating.
So that was incredible. There's a lot of good information, but I want to focus on one specific thing that you said that I think is the biggest challenge. And I'd love to hear if you were able to overcome it or you just kind of dealt with the problem like we all do. You talked about generalist to specialist. So now the question is, you got some generalists that have been doing lots of things at your company. They probably know the products exceptionally well. Maybe they were there in the beginning. And now you're moving to specialists that know how to do one thing, right? Mm-hmm. We know that once that happens, which with these specialists, especially new people coming in, you talked about message consistency, right? That gets hammered, right? Because you have these new people coming in, don't know anything. They only do one thing. And then you've got these generalists that now you have to repurpose. Now their job gets shaved down and you have to repurpose these people into specialized roles that is minimizing what they used to do. Their morale usually starts to peter out. So how do you handle getting people that are generalists that had more control and more power to accept a lesser role? Well, you bring new people in that in the beginning probably don't add a lot of value until they really start to understand the business. And then how do you stitch it all together so that you're looking across all these functions to make sure that there's message consistency? So that I think is probably the biggest challenge in growth that I have found, but I'd love to hear if you've been able to tackle that challenge a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, it's a good call out because, you know, this is one of the trickier aspects that you have to navigate through this. I think that the thing that's really important as you start to bring in these specialists that in some cases might create these layers that didn't exist there before, you have to frame for the generalist how this is going to benefit them. Because what I've typically found is that a lot of times the generalists, while they might enjoy the flexibility that their role offers, I think they also realize that they need to be more clear around what their career growth and progression is going to be. So I think it's really important to sell them on the kind of depth that they will then get through this new leader that will train and enable them. And that's going to allow them to become even more valuable in the future. You know, we talk a lot about, or at least I've heard the analogy before of like a T-shaped marketer. And I think in the end, you know, to be truly successful, and in many cases, if you want to be a CMO, you have to develop that T-shaped skill set where you're really deep in one area, but you have to be dangerous across all these areas. So what I tend to like tell these specialists is, tell these generalists are, look, you've started on that journey of developing that breadth. But in order for you to be successful, you have to have depth and you have to decide where you want to get that depth. And so that's where you have that open communication with them and identify where they fit within the kind of different teams and specializations that you're going to get built up. And then as far as like growing them and driving that consistency across, to me, I think that really centers around, you know, a willingness to go slow to move fast. And what I mean by that is, sometimes it takes a little bit of time to get alignment around some of the core, you know, I would say artifacts or foundational kind of frameworks that are going to guide that marketing strategy going forward. I think what you'll find is that a lot of these specialists, they want to make sure that they're anchored around the key insights that are going to drive that strategy. And so you need to be able to be comfortable to invest that time in getting that alignment. So, you know, just to use an example, right? You bring in a product marketing leader. One of the things they're going to want to do really quickly is, how am I going to drive consistency in how I tell the story? And a lot of that really centers around building out that messaging architecture. And again, you know, I'm sure they would love to go in there and start changing things on the website and like updating the sales materials. But in the end, they're going to find they're going to make way more mistakes, and it's going to slow them down, even though they're trying to move fast. And I think that's where that like investment in aligning around some of those, you know, key North Star kind of frameworks is going to really benefit you and the team as they go through this level, this maturity and sophistication process.
Okay. One of the things that you brought up is around measurement. And, you know, measurement obviously is becoming more and more important in marketing these days. And a question I get asked a lot, and I'd love to hear your opinion on, is, at what point do you hire the marketing ops person? And we've seen, you know, unfortunately, a lot of these marketing organizations, you know, the CMO may report into a CRO, and they give them a rev ops person who doesn't know anything about marketing, doesn't care. And so you don't really get the numbers that you want. You're not looking at things the right way. You're not calculating the ROI because your budget and spend the rev ops people aren't looking at it. They're just looking at those sales based numbers. So what type of person are you looking for? When do you think is the right time to put somebody on the team? And is there an inflection point once you have that first ops person in, where you scale to add a second ops person? What have you seen? Because you've managed some fairly large teams.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the end, right, like as a CMO, your responsibility is to communicate your value back to the business. And so I personally kind of tend to try to move that decision to bring in that ops person, honestly, as soon as you possibly can. I think in the end, what you'll find is your head of demand gen can wear that hat for a period of time, because what you tend to find is those people have a somewhat technical skill set, and then they pair that together with a strategic skill set, and that allows you to operate in a pretty scrappy way. But once you start to see traction and you start to see momentum around tactics that are going to work, to me, that's then usually the signal where maybe it makes sense to start bringing in that operational resource, because they do two things for you. One, they help you to quantify the impact of the specific initiatives and actions that you have. A demand gen person will think about those core metrics, those kind of North Star metrics. But again, it's the nuance that you miss that the ops person can provide. And so for me, it probably is, you know, once you get two or three demand gen folks in there, that probably to me is the signal where, hey, I'm going to bring in an ops person. It then removes all of the operational related work that demand gen team is doing. And it creates this scalability that is really, really impactful. And it allows you to drive that quantification of your impact. And I think in the end, once you deliver that impact, that then opens up the doors to building out the rest of the functions that exist inside of marketing. So I view like ops as a little bit of kind of a beachhead that kind of starts to crack open the door for future investment, because it allows you to tell that story internally around the ROI of the marketing efforts that you're implementing.
Great. Well, one other area that you're very deep in, because you mentioned you started your marketing career out in product marketing. And I think we all can attest, as we've tried to hire product marketing people over the time, that they're rare, right? Somebody that has the skill set that a product marketer needs in order to be incredibly effective. And we've started to see situations where if you're a one product company, it's difficult to hire a bunch of product marketing people, because otherwise what you do, you start breaking that role up. And once you start breaking that role up into very specialized things in product marketing, you kind of lose the whole value proposition of product marketing. How have you approached scaling product marketing in the past if you only have one or two products? I mean, obviously you got 20 products, you could hire one for each product, but as you know, your company gets bigger, the sales team has more requirements. Product marketing has a lot of requirements to sales and the product development team and other things along those lines. How do you go about prioritizing and segmenting these roles and still having them see the big picture so they can contribute some of the strategic elements they're responsible for?
Yeah, I mean, I think first and foremost, like investing in like Like, I think part of the benefit that product marketing provide is that kind of consistency. And that I think is most important when you're a small kind of agile team. And so I really focus on kind of building out the kind of core messaging framework and architecture that you're going to use. And what I mean by that is having that alignment from mission, vision, down to brand story into product value prop and your kind of product differentiators. And again, because you might be multi-product, it's important to kind of do that at the platform level. And then once you have that in place, that serves as the kind of North Star for the storytelling that you do want to tell. And then when I think about scaling, a lot of it really centers around when does that story start to become more nuanced and it requires more specificity? Or when or do you start to realize that of the products you're selling, is there one that is that kind of initial land product inside of an account? Because that I think is when you start to understand what role your product portfolio plays in your go-to-market, that then helps signal when you want to over invest in supporting a more granular story around that. So what I tend to do is I kind of look both upstream and downstream from the PMM function to assess when that nuance starts to develop. And so you can see that in one, how the product management organization is structuring their teams, and are there certain, you know, development squads or, you know, certain departments inside of the broader product org that require a more kind of personalized kind of one-to-one type of partnership? Or do you find from the sales organization that there's a growing need or to really understand how we tell the story about a specific product? And it's important because it's the, you know, way that we tend to sell, or it's where the competitive landscape is most aggressive and we need to, you know, be more opinionated there. So I kind of look at that cross-functional alignment to give signal when it makes sense to start to break down, you know, that those responsibilities. And then if you have that framework as a North Star, it really sets up that person for success, because they at least have something they can anchor around as they think about what that narrative should be and how they want to build the product specific components of that story. And making sure that it still ladders and ties up to the broader kind of product positioning that you've set up in the market.
Well, that's brilliant. Thank you. One thing that I did want to ask you about, because one of the key problems that I keep hearing over and over from a lot of CMOs is that there are so many skill sets that you need to hire in marketing in order to be successful, right? I mean, if you're in accounting, let's face it, they all kind of look alike, right? Sorry, there's no accounting people on this, I don't think. But they all kind of look alike. They have the same skill sets. In marketing, you need visionaries and you need strategists and you need great tacticians and people that are great at details. You need people that are creative and you need people that can write and you need people that are analytical two ways. They got to be able to look at numbers and they got to be able to understand buyer behavior and psychology. And all of these people are not going to go to dinner together. Right. I mean, they don't have the same personalities. They don't look at the world the same way. Your designer and your ops person couldn't be more different. Right. More than likely. Right. And so you've got to figure out how to get all these people to work together. And you've worked with these large teams. What have you found that has been successful for taking these different personalities, these different skill sets? Now you've got these people in siloed based roles because they're specialists. How do you make that all mix? How do you create the stew?
I think that, you know, one, you have to be clear around what is the consistent values that you want to see across the different teams in a marketing department. So even though they might look at the world in a different way, how should they, at least what do you prioritize and what do you value? Because I think that ensures that there's at least a foundation upon which they can align and collaborate. And so for me personally, like, I really value marketers that are customer centric, metrics driven, and strategically aligned. And so for me, I think those are inherent characteristics that you can see, you know, no matter whether your role skews more creative or whether it skews more messaging focused or whether it skews more kind of, you know, demand gen focused. Because I think in the end, like, you want people that, you know, on the customer-centric side, bring that kind of empathy to their roles. And in the end, you know, the best marketing is centered around this understanding of our customer and their pain points. And how are we going to communicate to them in a way that builds confidence that our offering can address those needs? The second thing is, I like people that are data-driven, because I think marketers can get themselves in the trap of thinking about their role in a binary way. Like, did I deliver this asset? You know, did I launch this feature? And that's just a very, I would say, simplistic approach to the role that they are being asked to deliver. In the end, like, you know, we're here to deliver impact for the business. And so you need to think about, you know, your responsibilities in that more nuanced way. And so if you value being data driven, then it inherently is going to be a better fit for, you know, the people that are working together, because you're always going to have that subset that comes naturally to them. That's your market, that's your demand gen and your marketing ops folks. But, you know, if you can pair that with a product marketer that thinks in that way, or a creative that is trying to optimize the performance of their ads, like, it just creates this shared understanding. And then the last thing is strategic alignment. And for me, I think that is, you know, that's another way to talk about, can you see the big picture, and can you tie the, you know, work that you're doing to these broader, bigger goals, whether those are marketing goals or whether those are company goals. Because I think in the end, that's what keeps people motivated and so that way they don't get distracted or too, I would say, myopically focused around their specific objectives. Because in the end, like, we're here to win as a business. We're not winning as a marketing team or winning as an individual. Like, the goal here is to ensure that the business is healthy, that it's growing, that it's profitable, that, you know, it has this long-term sustainability. And so I found that if, you know, for me, those are the three that I really anchor on and why. But, you know, I think as a CMO, you got to figure out, what do you want to anchor your team around? But if you have that clarity and that alignment, and making sure that those different characteristics fit well together, you know, that's going to ensure the success that you're probably looking for.
Yeah, you're one of the few CMOs I've ever actually heard use the word profit. but what I like to leave these conversations on, and it's what we do here at this podcast, is I like to ask the question, what is the greatest piece of advice you can either give for existing CMOs or somebody that wants to become a CMO? What is the best thing that you've learned that you think you could pass on that will make an impact for somebody?
Yeah, it's connected, I think, you know, towards this last question. But for me, like, I guess I'll go back to the statement I just said, where we win together or we lose together. I think as a CMO, you have to think about the interconnectivity between your work with other departments. You know, marketing kind of sits right at the middle of a lot of different functions. And so it's really hard for us to, you know, say, like, be successful without having others be successful with you. And so I think the more that you can get into this mindset of, you know, the integrated role that you play as a CMO, I think the more likely you're going to be successful, because it's going to drive you to think about accountability in a shared way. Like, you're going to drive better conversations with your cross-functional partners. You're going to be more open to collaboration. And that kind of approach, that mentality, is going to, I think, give you the runway that's needed to show the impact and the success that you can deliver. And so if you bring that mindset to your role, it's going to avoid some of the pitfalls that, you know, cause CMOs to you know, find friction in their role, or honestly just be unhappy in their kind of day to day. Like, being a CMO is a hard job. And so I always find that if I keep this positive attitude around, you know, success, and in keeping this very broad point of view, it helps me avoid, you know, some of the challenges that I might face, because I'm always trying to keep the big picture around broader business success and winning with my cross-functional partners. And so hopefully that kind of guides people in a mental shift that can help them, you know, overcome some of the challenges that they face in a role like ours.
This was awesome. Thank you so much for your time today. Really insightful points here. So for those of you on this podcast, you know, this, take these words to heart, because the way that Jason approached this, and he was looking at the holistic picture, there are lots of different elements here that you need to pull together in order to have a successful team. The only thing I'm going to add to Jason on top of this is, be careful when you're hiring. A lot of times, if you're in high growth mode, you'll find that the CFO goes, okay, we're going to hire 100 salespeople. You have 10 new hires this year. And you're like, well, what are those 10 hires? And you just start hiring to make a quota. You start hiring people to take care of people on your team that are high performers because you don't want them to leave. Be judicious in how you hire. And I think one of the things that Jason had a very tactical approach to, exactly the type of people he wanted, the personalities, and then how to structure them to work together, how to take the old employees to work with the new specialists and have them all work in harmony, because it is very, very difficult. So those great words of wisdom, Jason. Hopefully we'll get you on another podcast at some point, and good luck. Customer.io.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it. And, all right. Really enjoy the conversation, and thanks for having me.
Talk to you soon.